Okay, let's get cracking. Today we are finishing off Meseches Megillah with Perek Daled Mishnah Yod, and then we're going to start Meseches Moed Katan with Perek Aleph Mishnah Aleph. We learned previously in Perek Daled Mishnah Daled of Meseches Megillah that it used to be the custom in the olden days to have someone translate the public Kriyas HaTorah into Aramaic to make sure that everyone would understand the laning. Our Mishnah, however, is going to teach us that certain sections of the Torah should not be translated because the information contained there is not necessarily the most appropriate for the general public. It's still holy, it's still the Torah, it still should be read, but we don't necessarily need to translate it for the general public. And for the same reason, as the Mishnah is going to describe, certain sections from the Nevi'im should also not be read as the Haftorah. What are some examples? As the Mishnah, Maisa Ruvain Nikra Velomitar, gave the story of Ruvain. When Ruvain went and he supposedly had some sort of relationship with Bila, his father's Shivcha, so that section should be read, but not translated, so as not to embarrass Ruvain, as the Gemara tells us in Meseches Shabbos. The Gemara says that it was a mistake for someone to think that Ruvain actually sinned. What really happened was that after Rachel died, Yaakov moved his bed from her tent to the tent of Bilhah, Rachel's Shivcha, and Ruvain felt that this was an insult to his mother Leah, and so he moved the bed into Leah's tent, but it wasn't necessarily a terrible thing, but regardless, this is not a section that we should be reading in public. Continuing in the Mishnah, Maisen Tamar Nikra Umetargim, the story of Tamar. When Tamar was raped by Amnon in Shmuel Beis, that section may be read as a Haftorah, and even translated over the Psukim that refer to Amnon as the son of David may not be read as we're about to learn. Continuing in the Mishnah, Maisa Egel Harishon Nikra Umetargim, the first telling of the whole Chet Egel story in Sefer Shemos is read and is translated, as the Gemara tells here in Meseches Megillah. Although the story reflects very badly on the Jewish people, reading it in public benefits them because the embarrassment caused by the reading helps as a kapara, as an atonement for the terrible sin that we committed over there. The Hasheni Nikra Velomitargim, but the second description of the story in Psukim Chaf Aleph to Chaf Hei and Lamed Hei over there again, and Sefer Shemos, that section should be read and not translated, since the second description of the Chet Egel describes Aaron as being partially responsible for the Chet Egel, for the sin of the golden calf. We don't translate it out of respect for him. And similarly, the Mishnah tells us, Birkas Kohen, and similarly, the Psukim in Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Naso describing the blessing of the Kohanim, that section should be read but not translated because it contains the words, May Hashem show you his greatness, his light, which might be understood by some people as meaning that Hashem favors the Jewish people even though they do not actually deserve it. As the Bartanura says, these people would fail to realize that the Jewish people do, in fact, deserve the favor of Hashem. Rashi quotes the Gemara Maseches Brachos, Nafchafim Beis, which tells over that Hashem said to the angels, do the Jewish people not deserve the favor that I show them? I said, and you shall eat, and you shall be satisfied, v'yachalta, v'savoto, v'yarachta, the psukim of benching, which tells that there's an obligation of benching, which means, again, you're obligated in Birchas HaMazon. But they accepted upon themselves to say the bracha even after eating a piece of bread that is simply the size of an olive or an egg, of a kezias or of a kibetza. Continuing in the Mishnah, Maisa David ve'Amnon lo nikruan v'lo mitargim, the psukim in the story of David and Amnon that refer to Amnon as the son of David, like we just said, are not read or translated, although the story referred to earlier as the story of Tamar may be read and translated as the Mishnah taught above. These particular psukim must be taken out of respect for David HaMelech. Ein Maftirin B'Merkava, says the Mishnah, you can't read the various the Maisa Merkava as described in the beginning of Sefer Yecheskel as after, because when someone hears it, it's mystical description of heaven. People are going to ask questions about it and try to examine its secrets, which are inappropriate for everyone except for like the really holy people. As the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, the vision of heaven experienced by Yecheskel is called the Maisa Merkava, because it describes the angelic beings bearing the throne of Hashem like horses drawing a chariot. The wisdom contained in this section is of such a secret nature that it may not be taught to anyone explicitly. Rather, the teaching may only give its broad outline to a really big Talmud Chacham who is perceptive enough to infer the details on his own, as described to us in the Mishnah in Meseches Chagiga. continuing in the Mishnah, via Rabbi Yehuda, Matir. Rabbi Yehuda permits reading this as a haftorah because people who cannot understand it will not try to even understand it. Rabbi Lezer says, "In maftirin behoda es Yerushalayim." You can't read the 16th parak of Yechezkel, which begins, "They should make known to Yerushalayim all of her disgusting things that they're doing as a haftorah," because it speaks of the destruction and ultimate degradation of Yerushalayim, Ir Hakodesh. Continuing now, as we begin Maseches Moed Katan. Now, by way of introduction to Maseches Moed Katan, which is going to be primarily dealing with the halachas of Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the Yomim Tovim, Pesach, and Sukkot. Now, the holy days of the year are really two types. There's Shabbos and Yom Kippur, during which all melacha is not allowed, as the Mishnah describes in Maseches Shabbos. There's Yom Tov, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, and Sukkot, during which many activities needed for the preparation of food are allowed, even though they involve actual melacha, as we learned in Maseches Beitzah. However, as perhaps many of us know, the Yomim Tovim, Pesach, and Sukkot are themselves divided into two periods of holiness. You have the first and the last day, at least in Eretz Yisrael, it's one day. In Chutz La'aretz, it's 2 days. But those have the sanctity of Yom Tov, in which melacha is not allowed except for what we need to do in order to prepare food. But then there is a time in between, 5 days, in the case of Pesach, 6 for Sukkot, during which most melachos are allowed. And again, we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael. These days in the middle are known as Chol HaMoed, which literally means the mundane period of the Yom Tov. It's sort of like an oxymoron. It's Chol and it's Moed. It's regular and it's also holy. It's a special time. And that's exactly a question. If you look at many of the halachic discussions, it's the question and the crux of the various disputes is Chol HaMoed more Chol or more Moed? And that's a discussion that is certainly had. Now, despite what many people believe, Chol HaMoed is actually a very holy period of time. The Gemara, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, that someone who's mevaze es HaMoed, someone who disgraces the Yomim Tovim, and that includes Chol HaMoed, is certainly not in a very good spot. So we want to make sure that even Chol HaMoed is treated in an appropriate fashion. Now, even though Chol HaMoed is holy, it's certainly not as holy as the first and last day of Yom Tov, and many activities are prohibited during Chol HaMoed as well. Some are prohibited for reasons of malacha, some because they involve unnecessary or excessive tircha, exertion, and some because permitting them would cause Chol HaMoed to lose its sense of holiness, its kedusha, and make it seem like an ordinary workday. And we're going to discuss various times when you are allowed to do various malachos on Chol HaMoed. The laws of Chol HaMoed are rooted in the idea that malacha should be forbidden during Chol HaMoed as well and are permitted only for specific reasons, as we are going to learn. Now we are going to begin with that introduction in mind, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph of Maseches Moed Katan. Now, like we said, although malacha is generally prohibited on Chol HaMoed, one may do malacha to prevent loss or damage. That's what we refer to as davar ha'avid. If there's a business deal, for example, that you're going to lose a lot of money if you don't do it, so you're going to lose a lot, so you're allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. If there's something else up, it's getting damaged and it's going to cause you a tremendous loss, you can take care of it on Chol HaMoed. However, this is permitted only when one does not expend excessive effort, referred to as tircha yaseir, extra effort. If a malacha entails great effort, then it's prohibited even for the sake of averting a tremendous loss. This Mishnah is going to discuss how these rules affect the malacha of watering a field on Chol HaMoed. It also mentions the Shemitah year when certain work on a field are also forbidden. It says the Mishnah, Mashkin beis hashlachin b'moed uvashvias, we may water a field that requires constant watering on Chol HaMoed and on Shemitah. Even though watering is usually forbidden on Chol HaMoed, a person is allowed to water a field that needs constant irrigation, because if he does not do so, his crops will be damaged. As we learned previously, one may do malacha on Chol HaMoed if it's going to be for a davar ha'avid, something that's going to prevent loss or damage. Bein mimayan sheyotza betchila, bein mimayan shelo yotza betchila, whether he is taking water for this purpose either from a new spring which emerged recently or from an old spring which did not emerge recently, either way, although the sides of a new spring are weak, he may use its water. We are not concerned that they might collapse and that he will come to exert exceptional effort in repairing them. We should be allowed to do it again because of the davar ha'avid. However, says the Mishnah, aval ein mashkin, however, we may not water it. Lo mimei hageshamim, not by diverting water from a pool of rainwater to one's field with his foot, even though that does not involve such effort, v'lo mimei hakilon, or with water drawn from a well with a bucket, which does not require great effort, since taking since taking water from a well is forbidden due to tircha, extra effort, the chachamim also prohibited taking water from a pool of rainwater where there's little effort involved, because if that were permitted, then people might think that using a well is also allowed. One final case discussed in the Mishnah, vein osin ugios lagfanim, you cannot allow to make ditches around the roots of grapevines to collect rainwater there as well, because that too requires excessive effort, which you cannot do during Chol HaMoed. As the Tosafot points out, the last two prohibitions, watering from collected rainwater or a well, and digging ditches around vines, apply only on Chol HaMoed and not on Shemitah. During Shemitah, there is certainly no restriction on exerting great effort whatsoever. Have a great day.